Welcome to The Brainstorm, a podcast and video series from ARK Invest. Tune in every week as we react to the latest in innovation and reflect on how short-term news impacts our long-term views. To learn more, visit ARK-invest.com.
ARK Investment Management, LLC is an SEC-registered investment advisor. ARK and Public are unaffiliated entities and do not have a relationship with respect to either firm marketing or selling the products or services of the other, and therefore ARK disclaims responsibility for any loss that may be incurred by Public's clients or customers. The information provided in this show is for informational purposes only and should not be used as the basis for any investment decision and is subject to change without notice. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. An investor should determine for themselves whether a particular investment management service is suitable for their investment needs. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK and/or show guests and are not endorsements by ARK of any company or security or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in the show may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARK's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements. ARK assumes no obligation to update any forward-looking information. ARK and its clients, as well as its related persons, may, but do not necessarily, have financial interests in securities or issuers that are discussed. Certain information was obtained from sources that ARK believes to be reliable. However, ARK does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information obtained from any third party.
Welcome to The Brainstorm, episode 53. Today we've got Joseph with us to talk GPT Mini. And then the buzz of the town will dive into Polymarket. Joseph, what was the announcement? Why is it important?
So last week, OpenAI released GPT-4o Mini, which is a scaled-down version of their flagship model, GPT-4o. The important takeaway here is that it's not only a much smaller, faster model, but it's significantly cheaper than their flagship model, GPT-4o. So GPT-4o costs, on average, $7.50 per million tokens inferenced, and GPT-4o Mini costs about 26 cents on that same metric. So they've released a model now that is less than 5% the cost of their flagship model, and this is really showing that they can compete not just in the realm of large flagship models, but also for these smaller models that are designed to run as cheaply as possible. So,
Joseph, I know we talked about it on Friday, but what was the contextualization saying, you know, if you ran this all out for an hour, what does that roughly come to on an hourly cost basis?
Oh, like the equivalent to if you spoken words for an hour, what that works out to be?
No, I think it was like if you just ran, right, it's a million, it's priced per million tokens. Mm-hmm. But if you put in some assumption for how quickly it could output content, it's like roughly like $15 to $30 an hour if just generating, you know, comparing it to like a human intern type capability.
Right. I'm trying to remember off the top of my head. The takeaway from that main headline takeaway is that it dramatically undercuts the price of human labor. If you have an idea for what, you know, an intern would cost per hour, or even sort of, you know, a general knowledge worker, this will significantly undercut whatever the price that a human could output, right? If you think a human working over the course of an hour could generate about 3,000 tokens, and our chief futurist did the math on this not too long ago as well, that would cost something like $6 per 1,000 tokens for a human being to produce that over the cost of an hour. And earlier versions of GPT-4, were already undercutting that, you know, at a hundredth of the price, right? So you can imagine taking those cost savings now, an order of magnitude, a couple order of magnitudes lower than that. That's, how to contextualize how this would fit in the knowledge worker.
Joseph, what is the end goal here, as in what is the end state of model performance and cost look like? I mean, it's only been a few years that these have been out in the wild and we're already, you know, slashing and cutting costs and performance is increasing at a mind-boggling pace. So what does this mean for the overall space going forward?
There have been two main arms races, you could say, going on within large language models, right? The first is flagship performance and how we can push that frontier forward. And in that, it's really been OpenAI, Anthropic, and to a lesser degree, Meta and Google as well, competing for these flagship models, pushing performance forward at all costs. In some cases, that's come with aggressively higher prices as well, right? Some of Anthropic and OpenAI's models have been relatively expensive, $7.50 per million tokens. Anthropic released a model a while back that was $30 per million tokens. And that's kind of been one vector along which these have been evolving. The other main arms race that's going on at the same time is reducing costs of models so that you can actually deploy them at scale. The issue with some of these more expensive models is the costs associated with them are going to stack up pretty quickly if you give every AI agent that's based on this model thousands and thousands of tasks per day and make it inference and consume hundreds of millions of tokens per day or perhaps even per hour. So the goal here is to get models as cheaply as you possibly can so that you can deploy them across any kind of task that you want to automate for a knowledge worker. So this is the stepping stone to automating daily tasks that right now aren't economically feasible. And to kind of quantify that as well, we saw the release of AI coding agents like Devin last year, which used GPT-4 to replicate the workflow of an actual software developer, fixing errors in GitLab or GitHub repositories, right? And it's estimated that that was actually probably more expensive than just paying a developer to do that task, because inference costs were high enough that you'd actually lose money if you used an AI agent to do those workflows. But if you start reducing the costs, 20x, then you're entering a world in which you can have good enough AI agents automating more and more complex tasks.
Okay, interesting to hear that perspective, Joseph, but curious, and you half answered this, I believe, but it's kind of a different spin on the same question. Do you think this points towards more specialized models? As in, you have these large language models that are generalizable to a lot of different tasks. And now, are we seeing a trend where we'll have more specialized, modular, tiny models or mini models going forward? And is that, something that we're seeing across the board, or is this maybe not a trend?
Yeah, I think that's certainly happening, especially in the short term. We've already seen it with the open source models that are, I should know, we don't know exactly what the sizes of GPT-4o mini, but it's being compared to models like Llama 3, the 8 billion version, or Gemini 1.5 Flash. We've already seen some of the open source smaller models being customized and performing pretty well on individual tasks that are, sort of outside of the scope of a generalized model, or that a generalized model wouldn't perform as well on. I think that's going to continue in the short run, especially as it gets cheaper and cheaper to do that. At the same time, I think what this represents is the ability to take the reasoning skills of a very large model and distill that into a smaller and smaller model, such that you may not need to specialize it for a lot of tasks. So tasks that are, maybe today would require specialized data, but that you can think, are something that a model could reasonably logic its way through if it was, intelligent enough. I think those are going to become attainable through these sorts of models. Without a need for specialized data.
Gotcha.
Okay, and then now my question, two-parter here. One, how does this fit into ARC's broader cost decline for AI? And then the second part of here is, does the mini element require fewer GPUs to train? And kind of how does that tie into that, the narrative right now, which is, everyone needs infinite number of NVIDIA chips forever.
Right. So I'll take that second part first, right? Which is, again, we don't know the size of this model, but just based on the cost declines, we can imagine it's much, much smaller than GPT-4o. And that would require far fewer GPUs, like you're saying, to inference or to train specialized versions of the model as well. I think whether or not this actually leads to a world in which you need fewer GPUs, or whether this leads to a world in which AI is used far more widely than we thought before, requiring the same number of GPUs, I think that's yet to be determined. I think you can imagine a world in which if models are this cheap while still maintaining more or less the performance of a flagship model, they're going to be used far more widely than, people initially assumed that they were going to be used. The other aspect of this as well is because they're smaller, you can embed them in edge devices potentially as well. So we've already seen that happening with the open source models where we have a better idea of the size. This is something that you could potentially in the long run run on an iPhone. Or we've actually already seen people start to do that. I think compute needs will still be important moving forward. I don't think they're going to disappear, but you're definitely getting a lot more for the compute. In terms of cost declines, I think this fits into what we've seen in the past of cost dropping by 80 to 90% per year, with performance still increasing. I think we're going to continue to see this trend, especially now that you're getting major players like OpenAI in that race. Previously, small language models was not really something that OpenAI specialized in. It's not something that they really did. But I think the fact that they're focusing on that now shows that they see there's a potential to really compete on that cost decline side of things, not just on the performance side of things.
All right. Any bold, big predictions as a result of this announcement?
I think this falls within our previous assumptions of what's going to happen, right? I think, we've already kind of envisioned a world in which AI is going to become increasingly a necessary part of all of our workflows, right? And it's going to be integrated into, cheaper, simpler workflows that right now nobody's bothering to use AI for. I think this is just the next step in that trend. And I think it's showing that a lot of the closed model providers are going to be able to compete in that space just as well as a lot of open providers can. And I think we're seeing a widening of that divergence in performance between what the best in breed closed model providers can offer and what used to be sort of the territory of a lot of open source models like Llama 3 8 billion. So I think, I would view this more through the lens of, the competitive dynamics between open and closed source. This is showing that closed source is going to be able to compete where open source models typically held a lot more sway.
And I think a key thing that you and Nick said that's ringing true with things we've seen across a number of industries is, right, you lower the cost, you get a demand response. And so here, right. Even seeing on X people posting, it's like, this is great for developers to experiment. You can do a lot of things now and it'll cost you almost nothing to test out and even get to some significant scale with minimal costs. And so I think this does tie into kind of that thesis of Nick, what you're saying, where, this is great for end use implementation, right? It's not just, right, and not everyone's going to be using giant models everywhere. And so now mini models, SLM, the Ozempic has struck large language models, and now we've got mini models.
A real world implication of that as well, right? We saw OpenAI's deal with Apple not too long ago. That unlocks the door to hundreds of millions of users, right? I mean, you think there's like 1.4 billion iPhone users globally. Even if you're only looking at 100 million, 200 million getting access to these models over the next couple of years, being able to run those that much cheaper is a pretty meaningful cost savings for OpenAI and allows for those sorts of daily use cases as well.
Nice.
Definitely.
Awesome. Joseph, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you, Joseph.
All right. So speaking of lots of users using new technology, Polymarket, and being touted as the best crypto application because so many people are using it and they don't even know that it's crypto based. Nick, do you remember? I don't even remember what episode when I pitched that we should at the end of each episode make a Polymarket bet.
I do. You've been very early to the futures prediction market surge that we're seeing. And I think it is, probably one of the largest use cases for blockchain right now. If you look at just the sheer number and transactions happening. Lorenzo did a great job in his newsletter summarizing what is going on, but we're seeing a massive demand primarily around the election. So there's approximately $290 million wagered or bet within the U.S. presidential race on a variety of different predictions. And we're seeing, you know, the number of users and open interest just skyrocket as a result of, you know, ongoing predictions and, you know, certain events taking place in the world. So it's quite interesting. I think, you know, when you get into the nitty gritty of it, it's a market that I don't believe is currently regulated. At least Polymarket is not in the U.S., but because it's on the blockchain, you have ability to verify and have all of this be open and decentralized in a manner. So if Samurai, and this is kind of the way that I understand how it works, if Sam and I wanted to create a market for, I don't know, Sam, give an example. You're creative. What do you want to
whether bet on? Or not this video is going to hit whether or not this video is going to hit a million views.
Sure. So if Sam wants to do that, I on the opposite end probably saying no, but Sam believes maybe it is yes. And he has the ability to actually create this market by putting up his own capital, and that will start the interest for it. And then he embeds within that, you know, smart contract, the rules that apply to, you know, what a million views actually means. And I think that's where it becomes interesting, because it is somewhat arbitrary or up to the creator to determine what exactly counts as, in this case, a view. So maybe we're talking about YouTube, maybe we're talking about across all of the platforms this goes out to. That would have to be embedded into the bet itself or the prediction, which again, all open, it's decentralized. So it's, you know, contractually verified within the blockchain itself. And this is on Polygon, but a quite interesting way to have these markets pop up. But again, you have to be careful here because it is not regulated in the US where I believe it should be. But, you know, globally, there's less rules around this type of behavior. Fewer.
Well, I think one, it's like prediction markets, super fascinating. A very interesting way to filter news, right? Especially like once you get to volume where there's actual signal and not just noise, it becomes super, it's like Polymarket paired with X, I think is like a super orthogonal news source to traditional media and an interesting way to consume it. I think you're right. And the, you know, how you actually define and settle a difference saying, oh, you know, was this actually settled? I think with the, what was it? The superconducting material, there was like a lot of nuances being thrown around with, you know, how things would resolve based on what and replicability. So super interesting. But Nick, my question to you here is Polymarket really has taken off and shown its promise because of US elections. Do you think that that's a catalyst? And so now it can carry momentum past the political cycle through November? Or do you think it's more of a boom bust and, you know, it can still carry on, but post political heat volumes significantly drop off?
I probably would argue it's boom bust. I feel like I don't find it as interesting as you or maybe Brett, given your level of interest. Because I mean, one, you know, covering the online gambling space, to me, this is, you know, pure as gambling gets in a lot of ways. And there's different ways to define that. But for me, it's, you know, how much are people really willing to wager on different events? I mean, I think you can take it to a certain extent, but I think, you know, there's going to be certain events, and this is, you know, why sports betting is so popular. One, because it is largely, you know, very accessible today. But you also have events happening every weekend throughout the globe. You know, how many people are willing to make a market for different, you know, mundane things that are happening? I remember when I think it was the last season of Game of Thrones, but there were prediction markets popping up about, you know, who would end up sitting on the Iron Throne. And I think those are interesting, but, you know, does that really carry a massive market at the end of the day? And then, you know, how many TV shows or movies are you actually willing to truly wager on? And I think, you know, what ends up happening here, because it's unregulated, you absolutely will get bad actors, and you'll have people who have an edge and, you know, understand, you know, what may be happening. Maybe you're in the writer's room, right? Why not put a wager on it if it's not regulated? I don't know if that even is illegal, right? Because this is so, you know, in a way, it's, you know, you're talking about the Wild West, because it's an individual creating a market for themselves. So you don't know what that individual's intent is, or if they have prior knowledge. So I think there's, you know, you need regulation to come in and monitor this type of behavior, because I think it can get out of hand really fast.
Big regulation over
there.
Well,
okay. So I take my opinion from having looked at the online sports betting market, and regulation, when you have it, it lends itself to actually opening up the market, because it embeds a certain level of consumer trust. And if you look at the numbers, you know, once the US adopted better guidelines for how states could regulate, or, you know, allowing states to regulate sports betting individually, that opened up a massive market for legalized gambling, and protects a lot of consumers from bad actors, bad books. You know, this is, you know, people's individual wealth at stake. And, you know, you have to be careful when, you know, playing in any of these markets. I think someone on Brainstorm Friday, you know, you have to understand who your counterparty is when you're making these types of wagers. So I am a fan of regulation here. I mean, I think crypto. But
the beauty of decentralization is you lower that counterparty risk. But just from other things from Brainstorm that were brought up that are interesting is, one, not just the signal in the prediction markets themselves, but the signal in what markets are brought to the forefront and where there's volume as an interesting signal.
Yeah, like where consumer interest lies. And, you know, not like, I guess my point was, how many markets actually get, you know, opened when it's up to the individual? Mm-hmm. It probably ends up, you know, being consolidated into certain types of events. Obviously, political elections, sporting, you know, those are, I think, all available on Polymarket. And you'll probably get the obscure one here or there, but you'll be able to see very fast how much open interest, because you can see, you know, the dollars at stake. So yeah, it is kind of interesting to see where consumer attention lies in a monetary, you know, monetarily. And that's what this provides.
Right. And I think I'm bullish the trend of increased financialization of things, right? Like that's kind of what smart contracts allows. And then the other interesting thing we were discussing is, you know, Polymarket clearly getting a lot of coverage here, but the markets are still small on a relative basis. And so is there potential for someone to sway the Polymarket markets to almost do a self-fulfilling prophecy type thing, where maybe they lose money short term, but it's enough to influence an event outside of the market?
Which goes back to my point of why you need regulation, because, you know, I think actually, you know, blockchain, yes, it allows for this to, you know, be available, but it doesn't mean you can't have, you know, overarching regulation on new financial mechanisms. I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you know, pretty well understood the mechanics behind how this works. as in, you know, you're placing a wager. It's if anyone is listening to this, use the market itself. You're placing a wager. It, you know, shows up in a dollar value anywhere from, I think it's 1 cent to a dollar. So if the wager, if you're buying something and you're saying, yes, this video will reach a million, and you place the wager at 50 cents, you know, the most upside you can get is 100% return. So 50 cents to a dollar. And so you can kind of understand exactly how this is, the mechanic of it is working. So I think what's unique about it being on the blockchain is it does just allow, democratizes the availability of being able to open up the market, which is both good and bad.
All right, there you have it. We'll see what happens as the election cycle comes and goes.
Here's a Polymarket.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Bet. Does this end up getting regulated, or do regulators go after this type of behavior because of what it could do? By
make the market look right. That's the whole point. Yeah. Talk is cheap.
Sure.
Make the market. Sure. Let's
sure.
see.
Sure.
That's the value of it. People are putting their money where their mouth is.
Yeah, it's exactly
so
that
getting,
phrase.
You're getting real news.
Yeah.
You're getting real news.
No, I mean, I think it's interesting. It definitely is interesting. I mean, you bring it up at least 2 to 3 times a week, I feel like.
All right. We'll see everyone next week.
All right. See ya.
If this does get to 1 million views, then maybe Nick will buy me ice cream or something.
If that's all you want, that I can make that happen. I'll get you a nice ice cream cone, Sam.
Sounds good.
See everyone.